This is The View from 22 from The Spectator. Subscribe from just £1 a week at spectator.co.uk.
Welcome to a Spectator podcast special. David Cameron has finally agreed his deal for Britain to stay in the European Union, or so he hopes. He's going to come back to London and call a cabinet meeting, and we've got Isabel Hardman in Brussels and James Forsyth in London to discuss it. I'm Fraser Nelson, editor of The Spectator, and I guess I'll start by asking you, Isabel, what has today been like? You started waiting for a breakfast that never arrived, and when you met David Cameron, did he look as stressed and as worried as he looked in the papers this morning?
We have spent most of today thinking about food, actually, because the EU leaders were supposed to have a breakfast. It then became brunch, then became lunch, afternoon tea. And finally, they sat down to a slightly delayed supper where they reached their agreement. David Cameron's officials have really been avoiding us today, actually. We've had very little information on what's going on at all until the deal was struck. And there have been a number of hold-ups, particularly, we understand, over the proposals on benefits, which have now been agreed as a seven-year period for an emergency break for EU migrants and curbs on child benefit as well. But it has been a day where very little progress seemed to be being made right up until this evening.
And James, and looking at the deal, as much as we know of it now, we haven't had all the details, but we do know about child benefits. They're going to be index linked to the countries where they're paid, and we've got the emergency break and things. Do you think it's enough?
Well, I don't think it makes the referendum a slam dunk. I mean, Michael Gove, who David Cameron admitted in his press conference will now back Britain leaving the EU, is indicative of that. Michael Gove was on the Eurosceptic wing of the Conservative Party, no doubt about that. But the Cameron camp had been quietly confident until a few weeks ago that they would be able to persuade him to back staying in.
Oh, right.
But they're not, I think, indicates the problem of the deal. The problem of the deal essentially is this, is that if you are a Tory Eurosceptic, who has talked about how you could back Britain staying in, but only if there's radical reform, this doesn't provide you with a ladder to climb down, to explain to your constituency association, to the general public, to your voters, why you've changed your mind. Indeed, someone was saying to me, it's a rope ladder that doesn't quite reach the floor. But I actually think a better example is they're actually taking people up and asking them to make a parachute jump with no training. And that is the problem. I think that means that you will see more Tories backing out than number 10 expected a few weeks ago. I think that you'll see, you know, at least half a dozen cabinet ministers doing it now. And, you know, Boris Johnson remains on the fence. Losing Gove is unfortunate for Cameron. It's personally painful. And it changes the nature of the referendum campaign, challenges the nature of the referendum campaign that Cameron Osborne wanted to fight. But if they lose Boris too, that would be absolutely catastrophic for them.
So, Isabel, how is number 10 spinning it in Brussels? Is it saying game, set and match to Britain?
Well, Cameron was not quite as sort of triumphant as I expected him to be at his press conference. He obviously said things that we've heard him say before, such as people said we couldn't get this deal and we have. But he did at one point say, I don't want to overstate what I've achieved. And he repeatedly emphasised the fact that reform doesn't stop tonight. He clearly realises that he can't claim that he's completely overhauled the European Union, everything's going to be wonderful from now on. And perhaps he's learnt a little bit from the reception to the draft deal when it was published a couple of weeks ago in the British press, which was basically, is that it? Is that really what you're going to offer us? And he realises that given he hasn't actually had any significant sort of losses in the deal that's been agreed tonight, but he also hasn't really beefed anything up in particular, so he can't claim that he's got some great victory tonight in Brussels. His great victory is just that he's got a deal and he can go home.
And James, isn't the problem with this deal, it's difficult to summarize it in less than 8 sentences? It's so shot with bullet holes and sub clauses and other caveats that you cannot really explain it on the doorstep.
Yeah, I think that is a problem. Open Europe is a think tank that has been very sympathetic to the Cameron renegotiation. You know, its former director is now Cameron's Europe advisor in number 10. And tonight, even it's been reduced to saying that this deal is not trivial, but neither is it transformative. I think what this process has shown is how even with the migrant crisis and the Eurozone crisis, perhaps because of them, how absolutely resistant to reform the European Union is. But the European Union, faced with losing its second largest economy, one of its most, you know, a UN Security Council member, a permanent member, has been so obstructive and so difficult, I think is very telling about the lack of reformist will within the EU at the moment. And it's also telling to me that this deal is essentially British opt-outs, British carve-outs, rather than trying to use this as an opportunity for any kind of broader reform of the EU.
So, Isabel, we're talking at 11:30 at night. What's going to happen over the next day or two? How do you see things planning going forward from here?
Well, David Cameron's travelling back to Britain now, and he plans to have a cabinet meeting at 10 o'clock tomorrow. After the cabinet meeting, we'll get the date of the referendum, which will obviously be very interesting. And you'll also get ministers being freed to announce which side they're going to campaign on. And we've obviously already heard about Gove, but as James said, what Boris does will be hugely significant, particularly since even though Michael Gove is intellectually very interesting, he's very popular in Westminster, he's not actually that appealing to voters outside the Westminster bubble. And we know that because he got moved in the reshuffle before the general election because he was toxic politically as education secretary. And so the idea that he could himself swing lots of voters towards Leave isn't quite right. Boris,
I don't think anyone thinks that Michael Gove is going to swing voters towards backing out. What Michael Gove does is a few other things. He gives intellectual cover and respectability to the case for leaving. I think he reassures sections of the media about backing out, but you're not essentially backing Nigel Farage in doing so. And I think he's reassuring to other politicians and donors. I think that's what Michael Gove does. I think that, you know, I don't think anyone on the Out campaign envisages Michael Gove as the figurehead. I think, you know, if it's not Boris, it's far more likely to be Priti Patel that you see on your screens on a very regular basis than Michael Gove. But Gove does those other things which Out desperately needed.
Well, I guess the campaign starts tomorrow, so we've all got this to look forward to. Isabel Harman in Brussels and James Forsyth in London, thank you very much.
Gary, Winston Wolfe, Direct Line. Your landlord Mike says you wrecked his place.
Wait,
knocking holes in the walls. And all that graffiti? Fancy yourself an artiste?
No.
But it's all covered, Gary. Mike is with Direct Line. They'll cover up to the full amount insured for malicious damage by tenants.
Oh, good. Can I go now?
Oh, no, Gary. Direct Line's looking after Mike, but who's looking after you?
Direct Line Landlord Insurance covers up to the sum insured for malicious damage by tenants. Can your landlord insurance do that? Search Direct Line Landlord. Optional extra qualifying criteria in excess apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.